Good morning. So when you retire, you just move on to a lot more projects. And that's what I've done. And one of the projects that I'm particularly proud of participating in is our Vision Partnership Initiative with a lot of partners that I'll talk about in just a minute. But I want to acknowledge Dr. Pat Segu, who is the clinical director with the University of Houston, School of Optometry in Houston, who is one of our partners here, and Lindsay Wigington, who's done the research to put this project together. She's with the health department. So there's that slide. And so we know that poor vision in school-aged children does affect their academic and behavioral outcomes. We know that there are a lot of children who have been identified in the Houston area with uncorrected vision problems. And each year in the Houston area, there are over 20 school districts in the Houston area. And each year we have nearly 20,000 children who end up on the unresolved list at the end of the year, meaning they were screened at the school. They were referred by the school personnel for a vision problem, and at the end of the year, that problem is still not resolved. And we do know that there are a lot of constraints that families in socioeconomic disadvantages have in achieving success in learning. So our goal in our vision project is to improve the vision and vision-related health of children. We see children from 6 to 18 years of age. We see sometimes five-year-olds. We had a clinic just this past week, and they sneaked in a few four-year-olds, and we saw them anyway. And the reason that's very important is because of the service mix that we have, the volume. We do high-volume clinics. And I'll talk about how that works in a bit. But we started the Vision Project in the health department in 2007 with an organization called OneSight. And they do free eye exams and provide free glasses to children all over the United States. And, in fact, they do eye exams and glasses all over the world. And they came to Houston, and they had had been before, and they had an experience with someone, we don't know who, working with the school districts, and they didn't have a good turnout. And so they contacted the mayor's office, and the mayor's office referred them to the health department. And we started working with them using the contacts that we had with the school districts. And they came, and they initially came for 1 week, and the partnership was so successful that following year they gave us 2 weeks to come, because we were able to get so many kids out. And so we started that partnership in 2007. And after that, we realized that the need was a lot greater than what the service was being provided, after we found out that there were over nearly 20,000 kids. So our director, who's here in the audience, Stephen Williams, came up with this grand idea that we would have a local initiative. And he pulled in some people that he had met in a leadership class, a person who's we have a nonprofit that's associated with the health department, a Houston Health Foundation, and pulled her in, and she pulled her husband in, Joel and Margaret Shannon, and we began assembling resources to expand the Vision Initiative locally in Houston. So our goal has been, since that time of when we started doing that, I think we started the planning in 2010. We had our first actual mission in 2011, and our goal has been to see 10,000 children a year. And we are almost there at this point. But we started out with a pilot in the spring of 2011, and we saw 500 children in that week. And we've been doing that since 2011. I think this is our third full year of doing it. And this year, last year in the school year 2013-2014, we saw 9,800 kids in the year. And so we started out with our goal of seeing, I think, 200 kids a day. And we upped that to 300 kids a day. And last year we changed our goal to 400 children a day. And so we have we based our model off the one site model, and how we do that is it takes a massive amount of people to do the clinic. We have very great partners. We have Santa Center College. They have ophthalmologic tech program, and they bring their students in and they do the screening. So we have stations set up where we do color, stereo, distance acuity. What's the other one? Neuro acuity. Go ahead, Dr.
Sagula. Neuro acuity. We also check for the ability for the eyes to work together, so the ability for the eyes to focus, for a combination. So all those tests are being done in the pre-testing area, and they go to an ocular health station as well, where we're checking the health of the eyes, the front of the eyes, as well as the back of the eyes. We also check in the way the pupils react to light, how well the eye muscles work together, and we're also doing eye pressure measurement, as well as a prescription measurement, and they go in and they get their glasses prescription finalized by the optometrist.
So it takes a lot of people because we have a lot of stations. So like we would have 8 color stations, 8 stereo stations, 11 distance acuity stations. And we have people that are trained ahead of time to do those stations. Sometimes we have the students from the University of Houston come in and do some of the testing. And the core of it, though, is that we have about 14 lanes. We have 14 lanes that we staff with doctors, in addition to 6 stations where we do the eye health stations. I am not an optometrist, but I have learned a whole lot about optometry, because when I'm hearing people tell me stuff, I'm like, what in the world are they talking about? I know about refraction and all that, and about refractive error and all of that, just from doing this work, because I was like, auto refractors, and like they're telling me we need all this stuff. Like, I gotta know whether this is legit or not. So I went and did my own little cheat sheet, so I knew what I was talking about. I'm like, oh no, what? Now I'm like, what about that station? What about this? We have to do this. But we have a partnership with the University of Houston. Dr. Sagu is our clinical director, and she is a professor at the university, and she insists that we have the highest level of quality. So we can't skip any step. We have to do the comprehensive eye exam. We follow the rules and the practice guidelines for the state of Texas as far as optometry exams. And so the way that we do that is to have a lot of people involved in the exam process to make sure that every step is being done. So we are able, with this volume, with this method, we are able to, like I say, to see 400 children a day now. Really the only constraint that we have is the time that the kids have to go back to school. So what happens is we send out an invitation to the school districts and to come to one of our clinics. Right now we're up to like 5 one-week clinics a year. And so our goal is to see 2,000 children in each of those weeks. In addition to the See to Succeed, which is our local initiative, we also have one site that still comes, and they do 1 week, and they are able to see around 1,200 to 1,500 children. And they are a lot more mobile than we are, because we work out of one of the city's facilities, and it's right now we have a federally qualified health center operating out of there, and the University of Houston has their eye clinic there, and they have 5 exam lanes in the University of Houston clinic, and we added 9. We actually have 10 lanes, but we added 9 more with donated equipment from the University of Houston. We bought some, the City of Houston. We had one site donated some equipment to us, so our equipment is pretty stationary. So we're not as mobile. We don't have, you know, when one site comes, they pack everything up in those big things. They roll in, send it, pack, unpack it, roll it out, and they go back. So we're envisioning being like that one day. Dr. Sagu has plans to take over the world with vision. But we right now are kind of confined to the location. We do go out to one additional location at Santa Center College, and they also have, because they're a teaching facility, they have lanes already set up, so it's easier for us to go over there, and we transport some of our equipment over to there. But we have we're able now to see, like I say, 400 kids a day. And so the schools send out consent forms home to the parents. Well, let me back up a minute. There's mandated vision screening in the state of Texas, K1, 3, 5, and 7. And so the schools do the screening. They go through their process. And at the end of the day, when they determine that a child really has a vision problem, they send a note home to the parents and say this problem needs to be resolved. When the parents don't resolve it, which happens probably in about over 50% of the time, then they start sending out the consent forms for them to participate in one of our clinics. And also there's other programs that provide services like vision voucher programs. And we have a partnership with Eye Care for Kids. They do about 2,500 vouchers a year. But we find that this method is one way to eliminate all barriers, and I'll talk a little bit about that in a minute, all barriers that parents face with getting children into care. The biggest barrier, one of the biggest barriers, is getting the consent form signed. And that job is for the school districts to do and the school nurses. Usually the nurses at the school get that job done. Sometimes because of budget constraints, schools don't have nurses. And so they share nurses between campuses, and so it becomes a little difficult for the schools to get the consent forms back. But they managed to get the consent forms back for over probably over 10,000 kids last year, because we actually saw 9,800. And so the schools, we work with the school districts. We have three primary districts that we are working with, and the largest school district, which has over 200,000 kids, the Houston Independent School District, is one of our prime partners. And so they're able to schedule buses and gather up the kids, and they bring them in, and we have a schedule of schools that come every day. And we target the schedule about 440 kids because we have a no-show rate. But about 85% of them actually show up. And then when of those that actually show up, between 85 and 90% of them actually need glasses. 90%, around 90% actually need glasses. So the schools are doing a really good job of screening the kids of who really need glasses. And we actually, the beauty of the program is that we get very high quality frames donated by the SLR Vision Foundation and the SLR Corporation. They also provide all the lens for the project. And the children, we have an optical area set up, and they actually get to pick their own frames. And we have a person from the Berkeley Eye Center, which is a large ophthalmology practice in the city of Houston, who is in charge of our optical area. And her goal is that every child has to love their glasses. She's like, if they don't love them, they're not going to wear them. And so what is the point of doing the whole program and then they don't wear their glasses? And so the whole goal is for them to wear their glasses. Now, the only problem we have is with the high schoolers. And we don't have a lot of high schoolers that come, but when they come, you know, they're more, sometimes we can kind of tell what kind of school they come from, because sometimes if they have a little bit more resources, they'll come with their contacts on, they're on their cell phone and all that. And I'm like, oh, here come those high schoolers. I love the smaller kids because they're all, you know, they're all always bouncy and happy, and they get really excited about picking out their glasses. And so most of the kids that we do see are from the elementary schools. So we do most of the services right on at our clinic at West End Health Center. So these are some of our partners in this initiative. Like I said, we could not. This is a classic public-private partnership, and this is one of the best projects I've ever worked on, because there's a single focus, and that is on providing vision care to children in need. We do comprehensive eye exams. We give high-quality glasses, and the parents don't have to pay. We have removed every barrier there is to resolving our issue. Now, people say, well, what about the children who have Medicaid or they have insurance? And some of them do have Medicaid. Some of the nurses tell us that I've been telling this parent for, you know, a long time that they need to get this resolved, and this child has Medicaid. So that is not, it, you know, in and of itself, having insurance is absolutely necessary, but in and of itself, it is not the complete answer for some families. So we have to look at what other barriers families face in getting care. So it is absolutely essential that we have these partners who work with us to do this, because this is not just a City of Houston Health Department initiative. We couldn't do this alone. I don't think we could have gotten to this kind of magnitude without the partners that we have. I mentioned we have a nonprofit foundation that is able to raise funds for us to support this project. We got a $1.5 million 3-year grant from a foundation in Houston that's supporting this project right now. We've gotten other grant funding to do it. We're also looking at some sustainable ways that we can fund it through billing Medicaid and insurance sources. We have the Berkeley Eye Center. I mentioned before, they have provided doctors for us. Dr. Ralph Berkeley has seen patients himself. We have people from their optical center who are very key in providing services, and they actually now are overseeing the delivery of the glasses. So when the kids, Walmart makes our glasses, they, you know, do the production of the glasses in their labs pretty much, and also the SLR labs sometimes when Walmart is backed up. But when the glasses come back in, we actually deliver the glasses to the schools and fit them on the kids and make sure that they can see with them and that they fit and all of that. The SLR Vision Foundation is out of Dallas, and they provide services to children in the Dallas area and also all over Texas now. They're providing services to children. The University of Houston was absolutely an essential partner. We worked with the University of Houston over the years in other projects, particularly around Katrina, when Katrina happened, and they provided services when we had a shelter there. And like I said, Dr. Segu is our clinical director, and that partnership is actually key, because we not only they hire the doctors for us, we subcontract with them to get the doctors, and they subcontract with the doctors, and it makes it really easy because Dr. Segu has taught a lot of these people, and so she reaches out to her former students and whatever, and so we never have had a problem with getting enough doctors to do the clinic. Sandra Center College, I mentioned earlier, some of our corporate sponsors, the Walmart and SLR Corporation. So everybody brings what they have to the table. And the beauty about this partnership is that when we first started it, we didn't just go and ask people for something. We want you to give us this, whatever. We just pitched the idea that this is what we're trying to do, and people readily joined on. And then over time, as we started the planning, people just kind of brought what they could contribute, what their expertise was or what their interest was. And so we brought that all together to create this partnership. And how we operate, and we do a lot of our projects in the city with using the incident command structure. And it is a way for us to practice that at all times in special projects and whatever. And so, you know, leading up to the event, we do a lot of planning. You just can't imagine all the planning that goes on into seeing 400 children a day. But we do a lot of planning, but when we actually execute the actual week, we have an incident commander, which is usually me. Now we have Michael Robinson here that's doing it. But we're rotating people to learn how to do this. And then everybody has a role, and so it helps keep everything organized. Everybody knows who does what. Everybody knows Dr. Segu is the clinical director, so if we have an issue, there's no issue of who's in charge of the practice. It's Dr. Segu. There's no question about who's in charge overall of the operation. It's usually me. And so, you know, it keeps everything organized. We have a lot of school partners. We absolutely could not do this without the schools. And one of the things that we found is that it's absolutely essential for the administration in the schools to buy in to the project. We can't, you know, they're bringing the kids. We have not knocked on the door of a single family to find kids because they're all at the schools. And so we work with the schools. They identify the kids. They've identified the kids with a problem, and they bring them to us. A lot of times they want us to come out to them, but we find that this model is more efficient because we could not see that many kids a day, you know, going out to different places every day. So we concentrate all the resources in one place. So we were looking at, you know, what are some of the barriers to getting timely vision care. We wanted to describe some of the performance improvement strategies that we needed to be more efficient, and we did a little analysis to see if what the association was between zip code level poverty and various school performance metrics. And so this is just some data about the children that we've seen, the 19,000 kids that we've seen from 2011 to 2014. We went back and looked at a random sample of records. And so we found that most of the children that we are seeing are coming from the elementary school, and that's kind of what you would expect since the mandatory screening grades are up through grade 7. 52% of the kids that we see are Hispanic, 22% African American, and that's kind of consistent too, because in the largest school district that we have, HISD, about 61% of their kids are Hispanic and about 25% African American. And you can see that the 54% of the kids that we're seeing are between the ages of 6 to 10, and then the next largest group, 11 to 15. We went back and looked at some of the health history. We have a comprehensive record, and we asked the parents to fill out some information when we send the consent forms home. And so it's that we found that the information is a little sketchy sometimes, but they, you know, these are the problems that that they were reporting. But, you know, and we've also found out that our reading level was too high in the questions that we were answering. So we know that we need to revamp some of that so that we can get the information that we're looking for. And when they come to the clinic, you know, this is their chief complaint. Like I say, about 90% of them actually have a real vision problem. And so I guess you would expect that this is what they would be reporting. We do have the occasional child that comes that just wants a pair of glasses because everybody has them. But Dr. Segu and the staff have their way of weeding those out so they don't walk away with glasses if they don't need them. But if they do need them, they get them. So some of the barriers to participation for the actual clinic itself is that we actually have to have school administration to buy in. We have, it's right now, most of it is dependent on how dedicated the nurse is. If the nurse is sold out for the program, they will find the kids. We have nurses who actually go home to get the consent form signed. They track people down because they know that the child needs glasses. But if she's not sold out on it, then it may not happen. And so we want to try to find ways to get past that barrier of having to depend on the independent nurse. The paperwork is a little burdensome. We have to have consent forms, and when you have a lawyer look at your consent form, you know what that ends up looking like. We're like, well, we need this to be at a third grade level. Okay, but we got to have all these things to protect us in here, so that's a little difficult. Sometimes the information is unclear to parents. We have to have, like, we ask them to consent to dilation. So if they consent to dilation, we put a little sticky on their thing, and the doctors know. Well, they look at the, you know, they look at the record also, the consent also, but then this is just a flag to say they said okay, but they don't understand what that is sometimes. You know, it's so much explaining you can do in a piece of paper that you send home. The clinic time is that they're usually gone from school quite a while. Our first appointment is at 8:30, and so we try to get the last bus out no later than 2 because they have to get back to campus because the buses have to go on the route. So sometimes it's a little trying for some school districts to get there in a timely manner, and then they have to go all the way back to their campus. Also, at the beginning, transportation was an issue because the individual schools were having to pay for their transportation, and the bus, I think, is like $60. But some of the schools were struggling with paying that. I'm like, are you kidding? We're giving them free glasses, and you can't come up with $60. But HISD removed that barrier, and so now we went over to meet with them, and they are actually paying. They put the money for the transportation in the person in charge of the medical services budget. So now she has the money for the transportation. So, but some schools are still struggling with that. The biggest barrier that we have is parents that are disengaged. And we say disengaged, and we're doing some surveys now and focus groups to try to find out what it is. Why are the parents not able to participate? You know, why don't they see the importance of having these vision problems resolved? And so some of the lessons that we've learned is that we really have to work with the school administration, and we really work hard to do that. We try to kick it up to the superintendent, because we found that when the superintendent says that we're going to do this, then barriers start being removed. And, and when we were doing it school by school, principal by principal before, it was the nurse having to convince the principal that this is a good idea. But when it comes down from the top and the superintendent says, we will do this. In fact, we initially got a $200,000 grant from HISD because the superintendent was so sold out to the program that he gave us through the district and another foundation, they had $200,000 to do the program when we first started. So we have to figure out a way to really do more outreach to the parents, more education for the parents, and we're trying to figure that out with our evaluation that we're doing now. We know that the schools themselves need help with going through the paperwork, because we ask them for a lot of information. They have to send us logs, because we do pre-registration. We create packets, so we were having the nurses create these logs, so we're trying to find ways electronically to reduce some of that burden. We've added a person part-time who actually goes around and picks up the consent forms, because we're trying to remove barriers not only from the parents but from the schools to participate in, because we don't want them to get burned out and don't participate, because they're absolutely key to getting the other kids there. We are in the negotiations right now with HISD to allow us to do follow-up with their parents. Right now we're kind of constrained because they are the only ones who have access to the information about who is unresolved. So we're trying to use the legislation that already exists and our public health role to say and kind of treat this similar to immunizations. Like, this is a public health issue. We need to have access to this information, and if you don't have the resources to track these kids down, we will do it, similar to what we are doing in immunization. We do heavy-duty tracking, reminder, recall that actually has improved our immunization rates, so we want to do the same thing with improving our vision rates. And then, you know, we'll look at ways to be more accessible to the schools, including going out to some of the schools. We had one school district sign on for this year after we agreed to come over there where they are. But, you know, so that requires us to be a little bit more mobile. But they have a lot of kids unresolved, so we are working with that. And so we also are looking at our processes and evaluating some of those, looking at addressing some of our barriers. We have some gaps in collecting data, which is a big issue that we will be working on in the future. We've already improved a lot of our processes in terms of being efficient. I think, I don't know, it's very difficult for us to probably be more efficient than we are right now, but we're continually looking for ways and looking for data sharing agreements with the school districts, because we want to be able to go and evaluate the actual impact on academics and the behavior of the children. And then we looked at some statistics around poverty, and I don't think this is a surprise to anyone, but we looked at some academic performances, and these are the dots are where the school districts, and then the green is the poverty level, so there's some association to some performance indicators and where there's poverty. So our next steps are to do a more formal evaluation, continue trying to do quality improvement, really engaging our schools, nurses, and our parents, and trying to find, like I said earlier, some creative solutions to sustaining our program financially. There we go.
I think we're going to hold.